Welcome to the show. I've got another incredible conversation for you today. You may have heard me interview a few weeks ago ex-professional footballer Stephen Warnock, who's a former client of mine who wanted to share his story about how doing this work has transformed his life. He suffered from depression, suicidal thoughts in the past. It was an incredible conversation. If you would like to watch that, there's a link below this episode. The only downside of a conversation like that is that often when someone's a celebrity or they've got high profile, certain people will just switch off from that conversation. They don't relate to it. They don't think that that person is relatable to them. I disagree. The whole point of that conversation was to show that we're all just flawed humans at the end of the day. And at the same time, I think it's really important for anybody to share their story. So another former client of mine, Steve Potter, has very generously agreed to share his story. He wanted to talk about what he's been through, the problems he's overcome. And his story is extremely relatable. He is just like you and me. He is not a celebrity. He is not high profile. It's a great conversation. I really enjoyed speaking to Steve. And he's shared everything that he going right back to years before he ever came to speak to me when he was first speaking to a therapist a long time ago, right the way through to how his life is now. I hope you enjoy it. If you've got any questions, drop me a line.
When I come to you for help or whatever, I was struggling a bit, but I wasn't like suicidal. But having said that, years before I was, I think like a sort of really good point to this was that I'd been at a point when I was 21, around that age, where I'd been through therapy, as it was through if you go and speak to your doctor and they send you through the NHS, how it was back then. And what I got from it was that I went from being suicidal to just coping. And I went all those years to the point where I was just getting by as such. You know, have good times and bad times, but I learned how just to cope with some of the feelings I was having. And then we'd done the work and it sort of got really underneath the problems that had always existed and actually was able to get beyond just coping, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And get much further down the line where now it's like, I've had those issues throughout time, like probably many people do, but I've actually now found a way by doing this work. That means I don't have to just get by as such.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I come to see you, it's not like, you know, if I didn't speak to Paul, you know, I wouldn't be here, because I know that probably could be the case for some people. For me, I'd sort of gone through that stage, but I'd never got any further with it. I think one of the conversations we had was, do you know what? I feel like I've had help and support in the past, but it was more a tick box. It was like even when I remember speaking to the doctor and the person who was giving the therapy at the time, they had a pen and paper and they were asking you questions and ticking boxes. And even when I think of that, I was like, how would you expect to overcome these issues that have existed for so long by ticking boxes on forms? Mm. And then after a few weeks, you get to a certain stage and you go, well, that's it. Now you're fine to move on as such. And that's what happened. But then we never really got underneath all the potential problems that have been in your life.
So that's dead interesting, because I actually don't know that much about that part of the story. Yeah. So how old were you then
what actually happened, we went on holiday, me and Nadine, and I had a bit of a panic attack, I'd probably say, when we were on holiday. We didn't send a leaf at the time. So when I come home, it stuck with me for months, it must have been, thinking back. And then I was like, I'm going to need to do something about this, because it was getting pretty bad. Like the thoughts I was having, I was literally locking everything in and getting to the point where I thought, like suicidal thoughts were coming into it. So I did get help, and I went and spoke to my doctor and stuff, and they put forward what they would have done. First thing they said was, do you want to take sort of antidepressants? And the interesting thing, even back then, without doing this work, I always thought, you know, more drugs isn't the way forward. Like, it's almost like in America, doesn't it? Sometimes there'll be a problem with guns and they'll say, give the school teachers guns. And you think, well, more of what the issue might be is not actually going to be what you need. So I was always like, no, I don't want to go down the road of relying on that. I want to try and find another way. So I think even back then when I was 20, 21, I've sort of always thought there might be a different way than the sort of conventional way or whatever. So I'd done what I'd done, went through so many sessions.
And what was it? Like, what did they do? So did they say you can take some antidepressants and you said no?
I said no. And he said, go and see a therapist at the time. So we're talking not far off 20 years ago, really. So between 15 to 20 years ago. Mm. So even then, what the doctors, how the approach probably hasn't changed a great deal, but what was out there, what information and stuff. So to me at the time, it was like, what, like, how do we get beyond this? No one talked about mental health. If it was, it was just mental, like you were just mental. So I'm locking all this stuff in thinking, how am I going to get through this? And basically what we done like CBT stuff. That was it, really. It was like learning to manage the sort of symptoms like we spoke about. And that was really it. And I even remember at the point of speaking to the therapist at the time, the doctor, he was like, I couldn't speak to him, like, in the way I thought I needed to. And I mentioned something, I said, look, I'm going out, staying out, I'm doing this and that, you know, what's the situation? How can you help me with that? And he basically said, if you're going to carry on doing that, I can't help you. You can't keep coming here. So straight away, I'm then locking that back in because I'm like, I can't say that to him because he's going to move me on. And then what do? Because I don't feel like I can cope as such. So that's sort of how that went. And to be fair, I got to a point where I sort of, I did get manageable. So when I would have these issues and problems like with mental health, then I could sort of manage it myself. And like we know that it's on a bit of a sliding scale anyway. So you'll have great times throughout your life and you'll have difficult times. Mm. And I always thought that even when I heard people talk about mental health, I thought it's not one or the other. You haven't got good or bad mental health. You know, we're all probably somewhere in between.
Yeah.
So then years later when we started doing this work, I mean, a long time later, some of the things you were saying were like, they were ringing true with me from decades earlier when I was going, yeah. And that was one of the reasons I got in touch, really.
So going back to the earlier stuff, because you were fairly young then, and as you say, yeah, like 20 years ago, things have changed dramatically, yeah, in that time, haven't they? Yeah. So like, what would I have been? God, I was 21 then, so I don't even remember back then anyone talking about mental health. I was coming out of uni and it wasn't even a thing. No one talked about it really. So what had happened in your life back then that was leading you to feel suicidal and actually get in touch with a doctor about it? Because I would guess even back then, we talk now about how it's still rare, for especially for men in cities like ours, to take that step to get help. Yeah. Back then, that was an even bigger step. So what led at that time to for it being that bad for you to do it?
So the interesting thing with this stuff is when you think back, I didn't really particularly have a bad life. Like a lot like we spoke about, growing up, it wasn't like really traumatic where you think, I can understand why he's ended up like that. I think that was part of my biggest concern, was like, why has this happened to me? Like there's got to be something wrong. I remember sitting in the doctor's to go and speak about it. And I when I come home, because I had this issue on holiday, and when I got home, it was just, I was struggling. And I'd spoke to Nadine, and it was probably Nadine who was supporting, like, you know, guide me a little bit. And I even remember having a conversation with my dad, and he was like, what's going on type of thing? And I mentioned it to him, and he could just see, he just didn't have any idea what to do or say, because as I say, go back 20 years. So taking the actual step, I can't quite remember, other than just thinking, I can't live like this. Like it was probably like literally locking everything inside, struggling to sleep and stuff, and just thinking, I need to do something. I don't know what it is, and I don't know how I'm going to get sort of to feel okay again, but I need to do something. So there wasn't really much awareness or anything. Like now you'd probably only need to speak to someone, like a friend or a family member, and they'd probably be able to point you in the right direction, at least. It wasn't really like that then.
And so going back into actually what happened, because you mentioned like sitting down and there being tick boxes and stuff.
Yeah.
Was that with the actual therapist at the time?
Yeah, so what I remember it was about was, I think, seeing like, if you've mentioned suicidal thoughts, how far down this sort of path are you? So if you've planned it, I think it's like, Jesus, we really need to sort this out. He knows what he's going to do. I think I was somewhere in the middle where I wasn't planning it, but I was thinking about it. And for me, that was enough of a trigger, really, to think, I don't want to live like this. I need to do something. So, but then what it almost felt like, if I remember rightly, so a few weeks into it, they would do it again. And as you've moved further down the scale, like you would do, it's like, right, he's there now. So that we've done our job, which again, it's no sort of disrespect to the doctor or whoever, but that's probably just how it was then. And they're probably backed up and they've got other people they need to see. And it's like, can we get one, move one on? He's no longer suicidal. We've done our job type of thing. Or he's no longer thinking about suicide or whatever, however you want to put it.
And even back then, did you feel like it was just managing symptoms? Like it was just putting a lid on something that kept you alive?
Do you know what? Do you know when I think about it, I was just relieved that I could manage it. So I was just relieved that I wasn't constantly thinking the way I was thinking and feeling like I didn't really have any control. I'd get, like, as I say, get really good spells where for months and years, it'd probably be fine. It wasn't like I was going through life really, really struggling, but there was always something that told me there's something else here that I need to be doing. Mm. Or there's another way as such to get beyond where I'm at type of thing.
And then, so then fast forward 20 years.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah.
What led then to you getting in touch with me?
Okay, so we went into lockdown and everything was great. Weather was great, you know, spending time at home with family, still working. So that side of things was okay. And I was thinking, do you know what? This is my opportunity. This feels like I'm changing here. Like it's sort of just coming about at the right time for me. Finally, probably thinking like along the lines of what everyone always says, oh, time to grow up, this and that. So I was thinking, well, this is it now for me. I'm not going out, not drinking, not staying out, not doing any of that stuff. I'm really content being at home with my family, doing this type of stuff. And then what happened? I managed, I think as the lockdown relaxed a bit, me and Nadine went out and had a couple of drinks or something, and some of my old behaviours kicked back in. And I remember thinking to myself, I know what's going to happen here. Like the pubs are going to open back up again. I'm going to be out all the time. And I don't want to go down that road and I need to do something. So I got in, I went, I'd done what I'd done in the past, but I knew that there was a way of sorting things out, but I just need to speak to someone. So I got in touch with a fella about specifically getting control, not going out drinking, staying out, all that stuff. And I went to see him for a few sessions and it was just like, this just isn't working for me at all. Like we couldn't chat, like, even the words and the language he was using, I was using, was just totally different. We were like two totally different people. So it was like, this just isn't working at all. We were doing a thing called like brain spotting to try and sort the issues out. And it just wasn't working at all. So then what I can't remember is how I stumbled across your podcast. But I remember really clearly the moment when I thought, I could do with looking into this a bit further. I was in the car and I was listening to the Multiple Personalities podcast. And there was a moment where I nearly turned it off because one of my biggest fears when I was struggling with mental health years before was sort of like going schizophrenic or something like that, whereby you just totally, like, the worst thing that could probably happen in the sense mental health wise was going to happen. So when you start talking about the multiple personalities and multiple people, part of me, that come back, them thoughts come back to me. And I thought, oh, I don't know whether I want to listen to this. Because even in the past, when stuff would come up about mental health, I'd avoid it. That was my way of not going back down that road. I thought was like avoiding it. So I went to turn it off and thought, nah, just leave it on. Just see what it's all about. And as I listened to it, I was like, straight away, I was like, oh my God, that's me. And when you said, well, who are you talking to when you're having these conversations? Like, yeah, get that. And then the bit probably that rung true was the bit when you said, you go out, you stay out. And then the next day you've got like a £300 bill, I think it was, or something like that. And you've pissed everyone off. And I was like, that's me. Like, that's me to an absolute T. The person who leaves the front door is not the person who's out. And I was like, this makes sense. So I got more and more into the podcast stuff. And then I sent you an email or something. I went on your website and I thought, I need to see what's going on here. See how this can help me. Because if the podcast, just listen to that alone, is helping me in some way, then the more and more I get into this, then obviously there's ways of changing the way, you know, the road I'm on sort of thing.
Mm. So my memory, so it's interesting that you say like, this came after you'd had a spell of actually being okay because of lockdown and everything being closed and spending time at home. Because my memory of our first call, and it's always interesting these conversations to check back in on memories because that, you know, a big part of the work I do is about the stories we tell ourselves. And that's all memories are at the end of the day. So I'm always like, this is a story I tell myself. Is this true? So my memory was, so this must have been predating lockdown, that you came to me saying, look, my drinking effectively and going out and staying out and being out late is so damaging to my family that it's almost like end game stuff. And I need to get a grip of it. Yeah. Is that what it was sort of pre-lockdown? And then, that night out with Nadine triggered that again.
Exactly that. It was like, if I don't do something now, I'm going to end up splitting up basically. So that was tough to think about because my little lad's just turned 3. So he would have been 18 months at the time. So the thing that I used to think about was waking up and him not being there or whatever. So I thought, I can't go down that road. I need to do something and at least give it a go so that I could save that as such, because that's not what I wanted, but I didn't really understand. So when I spoke to you, I was like, this is my big problem. And literally within a couple of phone calls, a couple of Zooms, I was like, no, it's not actually my big problem, is it? It's what's happened due to all these other things that I need to sort out. It's just what I go and do as like a bit of a way of shutting off, a way of ignoring it, you know, numb the pain, however you want to refer to it. That's just what I was doing.
So I want to get into that in a second, but the important thing I want to start with is, you've already had, this is then interesting because you've already had 2 years before an experience with doctors and therapists and that sort of world. And then you've listened to my podcast. So when you got in touch with me, what were you expecting? What did you think it was going to be?
Do you know what? I didn't really know. I just knew that I needed to do something and I was prepared to give it a shot. The other thing was, the other reasons why I got in touch was the Anfield Rap stuff. I used to listen to it all the time on the way home from work years before. So I knew who he was from that. And then just listening to stuff. One of the main things for me was the relating to your experience and mine being similar. Even the stuff like going to match and stuff like that, it was the total opposite to everything else I've ever done before. Like, there was no sitting down, ticking boxes, no paperwork. It was just similar sort of to this. So that's what I was relating to. That was the thing that I thought, well, I need to go and have these conversations and just see where it goes, because I've already listened to some of the podcasts, so I know I'm on the right track, as in I actually enjoyed doing the work and listening to the stuff. So that was sort of my thoughts. How it was going to pan out was probably totally different. I didn't expect, the stuff I really didn't expect was the stuff I probably got most from was doing the work in between our calls. So really getting into various different things we've done. The multiple personalities one was an obvious one. The funniest one probably that I'd done was the one when he said, write down all the things you dislike in other people. And I was actually sitting on the couch doing it and Nadine was there. And I started reading it out to her and I started laughing. And I was like, I don't believe it. And I think she was thinking the same. She's like, I'm just describing myself here. Like all the things that piss me off when I hear other people doing it. I was thinking, I do that though. Like there's times where I'll do all of them things. So that was quite good. It was like, it was refreshing for it not to be so serious. And like, whereas I used to see it as like a bit of a matter of life and death, it was getting a bit more relaxed and a bit enjoyable, well, really enjoyable, to be honest. So that was probably one of the key points where I thought, this is enjoyable doing this. I'm actually finding out about myself and how I can change different things for the future. So, and it was funny as well.
Well, and if going back to what we were saying before, but like, again, memories, and you touched on it before. One of my memories is a few calls in. So we were speaking by Zoom once every, because we were still locked down, I think. Like, so we're speaking by Zoom once every 2 weeks. And then, as you say, like doing exercise in between, in touch by email. And I remember, I tell this story without revealing it was you in the past, but now I can tell people it was you. I always tell this story. It was like 4, 5 or 6 calls in, whatever it was. I remember you coming onto a call. This is my memory of it anyway, so you can tell me whether it's the same as yours. And saying to me, it's dead funny, Paul, because I was coming onto this call and, you know, when we first started, I was like, I've got these big problems with drink and going out and it's going to destroy my family. And he said, and I've come onto this call weeks later and I'd forgotten why I got in touch with you. He said, you were saying, my memory is, I was thinking about like what's going on in work and can I ask Paul about that? And then as you said to me, it's mad because... Then I realized I got in touch with you because of drink problems.
Yeah.
And weeks later, I'm not even thinking about drink. And I was like, I remember saying, that's really good. And yeah. you said to me, but it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
We haven't spoken about drink once. Like we haven't talked about that problem.
No.
Is that your memory of that as well?
Definitely. That was one of the things that was probably refreshing, really. It was like, well, no, we haven't even spoke about it. It was like, but I did notice that things were coming a little bit easier with that side of things. So it was like, just go with this. This is hopefully gonna help in the future. So it most definitely went along the lines of that, where I remember the very first conversation we had, and as soon as I mentioned why I wanted to speak to you, straight away you said, well, what we'll do is then we'll go right underneath all of that. We'll get to the bottom of it and we'll work back that way. Straight away. So you'd obviously understood where my issues were, but you understood how to get underneath the headline stuff, the going out and all that, and get underneath it and start looking at, well, how can we fix the stuff underneath? And that, if anything, was probably the most important thing, because it started unpicking a lot of stuff that I'd locked inside or had to try and deal with in my own little way for years that I'd never really been able to understand or even deal with in the way I can do now. So, you know, it's early days as well. So we're only 12, 18 months into this stuff. So another thing is it's really early days, as in we've got 30 odd years here. We're even talking about stuff from 20 years ago that's been locked in essentially for all that time. And then you're trying to figure out your way of how to unpick it all and move forward. So it was interesting that after a few weeks, we never even mentioned that sort of stuff. But the stuff we were doing, I understood how it was going to help, because I was feeling better so much quicker. Even I remember you said about, like, you say when people say over the years, like a weight lifted off your shoulders. I remember thinking back, I got a new job years and years ago because I thought the job I was in was making me feel the way I felt. And I remember having a conversation and someone said to me, you must feel better now you've got this job. And I said, yeah, but I didn't. I just said, yeah, because I thought, well, that's what's meant to happen, isn't it? I'm meant to get this job and feel totally better. I remember saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. And that was years and years ago. And when I thought about it, I thought, why do I feel like a bit shit? Like, what is it? So when we started doing this type of work, what quickly started to happen was that weight sort of drifted a bit. It started feeling less and less. And I was walking around, and even little situations that I knew I'd feel uncomfortable with in the past, I wasn't feeling like that. And it was just a nicer feeling to be able to go, do you know what, I feel more relaxed here about most things in general. Don't get me wrong, like, it's not like I've changed everything within my life, but the way I feel is the most important thing at the moment, because I know now, because of the way I feel, and I'll eventually be able to change more things that I want to change.
When going back to like that early phase, was there any part of it where, as we're doing stuff, you were thinking, what are we talking about? Like, I'm here to talk about drink, and I'm here to talk about like behavior, and we're just talking about something completely different. Was there any bit of you that was like, because I often talk about Karate Kid training, this is like for people, and I have to remember like my age now, and like loads of people don't know what the Karate Kid original movie was, but like the principle of, you come to learn about karate and some old fella's got you cleaning his cars and like sweeping floors and stuff, and just trusting that at some point it's all going to come together. And that's what I talk about this work is like often. And I'm always intrigued to know, what does that feel like from the other side? Are there times where you're like,
100%.
What's going on?
100%. I got to like a bit of a patch where I was like, what am I doing? Like, what are we talking about? Not so much on the call, but just moments of like feeling like, what is it I'm actually doing? Is this the right thing to do? And I think we spoke about it maybe. And I've said like you start doubting yourself. Like, I'm a tricking myself in believing that this is going to make things better in my life. Am I going to feel better? And then I'd do a bit of reflection and start writing stuff down about like, what's changed in me, essentially. Not so much what everyone else is looking at, but in me, what feels different, what feels better, day-to-day stuff. And then I go, yeah, do you know what? Look, think about that stuff. Like, well, if I feel better and all those situations feel better and, you know, I'm sleeping better, whatever it may be, well, if that's happening, well, it does work.
So then as you're going through it, because you talked about, is it right in saying sort of fairly early on? Well, we know from weeks in, but within a few weeks, you were feeling better generally.
Yeah, 100%.
And then there's another story that I tell myself about our work together, which was like, it may have been a 2 or 3 months later. So after that conversation of you saying, this is mad, it doesn't make any sense. Like, we weren't talking about it, and all of that side of life is better. And I remember getting an email from you in the middle of a week between sessions. And I think this is a really important thing to talk about if you're comfortable talking about it, because this for me, we've already touched on how, you know, the traditional old fashioned way of dealing with things doesn't often help people, which is something I've seen a lot of. And this is another side of it, which is the language we use around stuff. And I remember the thing you said to me was, basically, I fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I went out, I got bevied, I was out with my mates, and I've fallen off the wagon. Yeah. That was the line you used. And it was like, the way you sold it to me in that email was, like, it's all been a waste of time. Yeah. Like, this is shit. And I remember, I can't remember whether we did this in email, so it'd be interesting to get your memory of this, but my memory again is, either in email or on the next call, we went through it and I was saying to you, right, so that story, that language of I've fallen off the wagon, when you talk about like that, how do you feel about yourself? And you're like, well, I feel like a piece of shit. I feel like I've fucked up, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, okay. Come back to the beginning. So the work I do is all about, as you know really well, but for the person listening, it's all about our problems are based on how we feel about ourselves. So deep down, we don't feel good enough. Deep down, we've got loads of shame from our childhood, from trauma, from all types of experiences we've had. And the problem with that type of language of I've fallen off the wagon is it just keeps us in a vicious cycle of beating ourselves up and being in shame. And I remember saying to you, talking it through, right, well, tell me what actually happened.
Yeah.
And you were like, well, I went out at 7 o'clock, had a couple of bevvies, then someone else was there and we ended up staying out. And I remember saying, and you were like, so, and then I stayed out all night and it was fucked. And I got home and there was an argument and that. And I remember getting into the specifics. And again, I guess this is the type of thing other people wouldn't talk about. And I remember saying to you, well, how many pints did you have? And you were like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I went, well, how many pints did you have? And it was like, I had 10. And I was like, sound. Before you came to speak to me when this was a problem in your life, how many pints would you have had? And you were like, 20. Yeah. And I was like, sound. And I went, and what time did you go home? And you went, 2 a.m. And I went, and what time in the old life would you have gone home? And you went, 7 a.m. Yeah. And I remember saying to you, it's a win then. Yeah. I can picture the email now where I said this. Like, it's a win then.
Yeah.
And you were like, what are you talking about? And I went, you came to me 3-4 months ago with this problem.
Yeah.
3-4 months down the line. Okay, you've had a high and you've hit a bit of a low, but you're still a step further forward than you were when we started. You've gone from 20 pints to 10 pints and from 7 a.m. to 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So instead of telling yourself the story, I've fallen off the wagon and I'm fucked. What if you change the story to, I'm actually getting better. Like, this is progress. And for me, that was a really powerful moment because it felt like it switched something in your brain to, actually, I don't need to keep beating myself up. Because that, my thing was, if we do the falling off the wagon language, if we do that, you know, beating ourselves up, you're just keeping yourself locked in this cycle of shame and not feeling good enough. Whereas if we switch it to, no, I am actually getting better. All right, it's not ideal. It's not where I want to be, but it's progress. It changes the way we feel. I talk about the self-worth power bar all the time.
Yeah.
So if we've got this power bar, like a computer game of how good we feel about ourselves, every time we say, I've fucked up, I'm shit, we go down and that keeps us trapped. Whereas every time we say, I've done well, that's progress. We're going the other way.
Yeah.
What's your memory of that?
Yeah, I remember the emails. I don't know the specifics exactly of when it was, but what I do remember now looking back was at that period, like it was probably one of the best periods I've had of trying to do something and achieving it and then having a blip in the middle. And at that point, it was like the world's ended, we're back to square one. So previously, why I'd never really took certain things further is I don't want to not have a drink ever again. That's not what it's about for me. I don't want to be sitting there not drinking. That's not what I'm saying or what our work was even really in the end has been about. It's been about getting more control and understanding why we do certain things. So when I got in touch with you at that time, I felt like, oh, fucking hell, fucked up again. Back to square one. And then we had a conversation about it and started thinking, okay, I get that now. I've actually been doing better. Things are going in the right direction. And now where I'm actually at now, like as we sit here now, is that when I look back over the last 12 to 18 months, the issues that I've had, I've got a lot better than where they were at, but there's still work to be done. And then when I look back at, well, we're going 37 years versus 1 year. That's good going. We're in the going in the right direction. But in the past, I'd just gone, well, I went out and done that. So that means I fucked it up. So it doesn't matter. And nothing else matters. You're back to square one. And I think, like, in society generally, when it comes to stuff like that, that's how we think. Like, you go, well, I'm off the ale or whatever. So you're setting yourself up to fail big time. Like, now where I'm at is I don't want to not drink ever again in my life. What I want to do is go, right, well, I'm going to go there on that date and this is what I'm doing. And I'm going to go that match. I'm going to have a good bevy with the lads. Or I'm going to go to this wedding. I'm going to go with Nadine. And I'm going to do this and that. That's sort of where it's getting to. So that's progress. And that's how I want the future to be. I don't want to be saying, I can never touch a bevy again or whatever.
Absolutely. And so how did that approach feel? Because as you just said, and this, we're talking about drinking, but what we're effectively talking about is addictions generally across the board. And again, loads of the traditional world talks about, like, you've just got to stop.
Yeah.
Like, it's bad. You're a bad person. You need to stop. It's one of the problems. And look, I always use the same caveat of whatever works for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you go to AA or anything like that and it's worked for you and your life's better, fantastic. Stick to that. Stick to whatever you do. One of my problems with the likes of AA is this, is the idea of everyone sitting around and every week saying, I'm an alcoholic and I've got a problem. It's like, when we talk about self-worth, you're like, do you feel better or worse about yourself when you're doing this?
Even the thought of going through that process to me was just like, nah, it's not me that. I don't feel like I'm an alcoholic. Like, I'll get to have a bevy on the weekend when I'm not in work. But it was starting to get it to the point where it was ruining relationships. I thought, it does need sorting. But you know, when I think back, the best times I've had in my life, I've been on the aisle. Some of the places I've been, some of the things I've done, I wasn't sitting there having a burger and chips or something. I've done it. I've been on the aisle with my mates or with Nadine or whatever. So I can't dismiss that and go, I'll never do that again. So I'm like, well, the best times I've had, the best experience, the best places I've been, there's always been a bevy involved generally.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Doesn't mean you can't have good times without a bevy, but generally speaking, why would I want to say I'll never do that again?
Well, I feel like that's something that's stops a lot of people, is this side, the black and white thinking thing of I've got to stop forever and I can never do any of that ever again. I think actually that's a barrier to loads of people improving their life. And did you, when we started doing this type of work and talking about it in that way, did that fit with you? Were you like, actually, I prefer this approach that we can get to a point where we can 100%. Just have a bevy and control it and it's fine?
100%. Soon as we had that conversation, I started thinking differently. To the point now where I'm almost at, well, if I go out once a month having have a good bevy, so that's 12 days. Let's say I'm wrote off the day after. So there's 24 days a year. The other 340 odd or whatever it is. Great. What's the problem? Whereas in the past, I'd have gone, I can't do that. I've said I won't do that. I've said I won't go the booze or all this or that. But like, really? Is there a big issue there? You know, I've got a little boy. I'm going to raise him. Would I say to him, don't ever go and have a bevy. Don't go and do this. Don't go and do that. No. But hopefully I can now bring him up in a way whereby he doesn't need to feel a need to go out all weekend and stay out because things aren't going well and he can't talk about it and his problems are locked inside him. He can be in a relationship with his parents where he can come and say, this is a problem or that's a problem. Can we try and sort it out?
Yeah, that's really good. It's something we've talked about a lot, actually, about the, for anyone listening who's got kids, the knock-on effect of doing this stuff to your kids. We've talked about in the past, like, the improvements in your relationship, not just with your lad, but with other people in the family, of ways that you can now talk to them to let them know their feelings are okay.
One of the things I picked up on quite early was the shame stuff. Like, how we shame our kids and relatives and whatever. I was terrible for it and I didn't realise. I was like, oh, I do that loads. I can skip them and think that's how we connect and stuff. Not realising, we can't do that. That's sound, but how far do we go? And then when does it come a problem whereby, like, we're upsetting them and stuff and making them feel conscious and then they feel a bit ashamed. So you just got to be careful. Where's the line of, you don't want to be embarrassing them, shaming them, because then they'll end up feeling shitty about things.
And have you found that, like, as you've gone on, because you said we started working together, it's probably 18 months ago now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's flown, hasn't it?
It's unreal how quick it's gone. And you've fled the nest now, so to speak, like you're out on your own, which is, I always say to people, that's the whole point of this work, is to get everyone to a point where they're like, I'm good. They're my favorite emails to get from people when it's like, I'm good, like I've got it now, I understand it, like I'm living it, I'm practicing it every day. I understand life won't be perfect. Yeah. It never will be. But this is about my, one of my favorite analogies is, you know, life is waves and we're learning how to be a surfer at the end of the day. We're not trying to flatten the wave. That's not the point, which I sometimes think people feel like the point of this type of work is. It's that like there won't be any problems in life. And you're like, no, there'll always be challenges in life. It's about how we deal with them. Have you found now, and we've seen that, I've heard you say this during the time we worked together, that the knock-on effect throughout your life has been big?
Yeah, most definitely. There's we've gone through quite a lot of change. Even in that time, we've moved from where we've lived, me and Nadine and Ellis, all of our lives. We've never really lived anywhere else. So we've moved from where the area we've lived in. We've moved to an apartment rather than a house with a garden. So throughout lockdowns and stuff. So originally the first lockdown, we had a garden. We were outside all the time. Then we decided we want to do something different. We want to move house, full renovation on a property that just couldn't live in it. So we've got all that going on. We've got living in town now, which is totally different for us. I went going into those periods of change, I was thinking, how am I going to deal with this? How am I going to feel like moving from where I've always lived, the family home and stuff, memories and all that sort of stuff? And it felt quite comfortable. Like I haven't had any major issues with it. Even like the new house that we bought, which is a massive thing for us because of the amount of work that needs to go into it. So everything that comes with that, dealing with builders, everything else, cost involved, all those additional pressures and stresses, I've found it like quite straightforward to a certain point, whereby even when I think about it, people say, oh, all the work you've got to do. But I think, well, I'm not doing the work. Like, it's not me building it. Like, if that was the case, we'd be struggling because I haven't got a clue what I'm doing.
So what would it have been like in the past? How would you have usually dealt with stuff like that in like your old life?
Do you know what the interesting thing is? Like, we've come to this move and buying a new house and moving to a totally new area after I started really doing this work. Not that it was never an idea. We had the idea, but then when I started doing the work, I got more like into the idea of moving, which is quite interesting for me because I've always lived in the same house pretty much for 30 odd years in the same area. And I used to always think I'd never leave there. I'll always live in that area. And then a combination of having time to reflect in lockdown and then starting to do this work was like, yeah, do you know what? Why not? Why not live somewhere else and move? So even that, making the decision was easier. Like, to go, yeah, why not? What's the biggest problem that can happen?
And why do you think that was? Like, what do you think about the work made that easier and made those types of conversations easier? Because something I've noticed about you even throughout, even just a small thing, I remember saying this to our call once, that like you talk more.
Yeah.
Like you were more, even on our calls, you were more comfortable. You were more confident. You would like, at first, and this is common with people I'm working with, because we're so shut down when we start doing this stuff. It's like very short answers to questions. And then like even the thought of if I went back 18 months and said, could we sit here and do this? It wouldn't be impossible.
I didn't even really like getting on photographs. I used to sack it off. Videos, go on, turn it off. So stuff like that. And when I think about it really, it was just like, I just wasn't comfortable. Where now I'm a bit more comfortable. I thought the same company. I thought I'd never have done this 18 months ago. I'd been like, go on there and talk about that. No chance. Not a chance. And when it comes to making decisions and doing stuff, everything's just a bit more easier. So something that might seem like a big issue is like, I can go and do that. I'm confident now. Do you know what? I'd probably say I feel more independent. I know that sounds daft because I'm 38 years of age or whatever, but I feel more independent than I have done before. So
yeah.
I feel more capable of, you know, anything really, basically anything. Like, it is more of a possibility or an opportunity, whereas in the past, shut down, sort of know your levels, know where you're up to. Where it's now, it's a more of a case of, well, I only know my levels because I put them there. I've put the barriers in place effectively, or the way I've been brought up, or whatever it may be, your surroundings, just life in general. You know, sort of know your place as such. But now it's more of a case of, well, what are the opportunities? What are they? Funnily enough, I even mentioned to Nadine the other day about when we move. I've even thought about where we'll move next. And straight away she was like, what do you want about? We're not moving. Everything we've gone through to get this house sorted, all the work we're getting done, all the upheaval. And she's like, no. And I was laughing, thinking, I could probably do that again. But might not be what happens. But it's even that interesting to say, when you say about, how would you deal with the builders? Well, or deal with all of the situation that you've got on your hands. Everything just becomes more straightforward. I used to like put things off. I wouldn't phone them back, wouldn't answer that call, wouldn't want to do this or do that. And now it's a case of, I still will do that from time to time, because we all probably feel sometimes we want to have a bit of time to ourselves and not answer that phone or whatever, or phone someone back. But generally speaking, things get dealt with more timely. I will go and do stuff that is a bit uncomfortable, because I know once I do that, I'll feel better and the situation becomes easier. So when it comes to how I would have dealt with it in the past, some of it I just wouldn't have ever done. I just wouldn't have took that leap, that step. I would have gone, no, it's not for me that. I'd have probably gone, oh, I wouldn't be arsed doing that. Why would you want to go and live there? All the sort of stuff. But really, it was a bit about, oh, it's not like the fear aspect of it.
And in the language of like the work I do and the way I talk about it, is it fair to say, like at that deep level, now you actually just feel good enough? So no matter when you have those, we've had this, when we talk about specific conversations and specific situations, and you'd be like, well, I don't want to do it because of X, Y, and Z, which is what everyone says to me, what I used to say. And then when you dig underneath that and you realize, well, why are we really not saying what we want to say? Why are we really not making this phone call? Why are we really not speaking to this builder? And then we come back to the self-worth thing and we work on building that.
Yeah.
Do you think it's fair to say now that you've reached a point where, and again, it's a scale, but you feel good enough as you are, so when it comes to these things, they're not that big a deal anymore?
No, definitely. Yeah, that's something that people who would listen or watch would probably think, what do you mean you're not good enough? Because without realising, you probably think that you are, but then certain situations you won't do or you won't say these things. A common one's not having a conversation, isn't it? Not saying what we really feel, because we might probably doesn't even know it, because we mightn't feel good enough to be able to say it. But generally, that's my understanding of what it is. We feel like that other person, you know, we can't say that to them for X, Y, or Z reason. So, but generally speaking now, yeah. I mean, even the stuff with, like the building stuff, I haven't really understand building work and that. I've never really done it. But like, I'll ask the questions now. What about this? Can we do it that way? Even the other day, something that I finished on a job at the house, and I was like, well, what can we do about it? Because that doesn't look great. And I've been through it with a couple of different people and we've come to the conclusion nothing can be done about it. But in the past, I'd have sat on that and I'd have probably gone, fucking hell, it's his fault or his fault. And all those little things that we don't deal with or don't speak about, then we kick off over. So me personally, I had issues with anger where I'd just explode on certain stuff. And it would generally be, I'd think it was something stupid, like I'd get home and the dishes hadn't been cleaned or the house was a mess. And I think it was that kick off. But now I understand, well, it's all the other stuff that's going on that I'm burying or not dealing with or not speaking about is generally where the issues are.
And so how do you feel now generally? Like when you compare, and I always talk about old life and new life, and you sound insane even just talking about that. Yeah. But for everyone who goes through this, it pretty much feels like that. How do you compare the way you feel now to the way you feel back then? Like, what words would you put on it? What emotions?
Comfortable is definitely one. Like, feel a lot more comfortable, obviously, sitting here doing this. Content as well. One of the biggest things that I've got, not just through the work we've done, but the stuff you start listening to and the stuff you start reading, is like enjoying what's around you now. Being comfortable with what's going on and appreciating it as well. So, you know, even if it's just, you know, anything, you know, the moment itself, like sitting down, having a cup of coffee and some breakfast with your family and stuff, and thinking, do you know what? Yeah, there could be other things you could be doing. And if you go on Instagram and look at what other people are doing, it might look great. And you might think sometimes, oh, why aren't I doing that? But really, when you start realizing, you know, the stuff you've got around, just the really important stuff, then you've even that realization of not needing to go above and beyond and achieve more and do more and get another job and more money and stuff. All that stuff is in some way important, but it's not necessarily the be all and end all.
Yeah, that's really nice. Really nice. And what, like the work, generally speaking, you sent me a lovely email the other week, which when we were talking about doing this, it was, and it's one of the most fulfilling things about doing this stuff is seeing the changes people make and hearing about it. How do you sum up this work? When you reflect on this now, like from a wider life perspective, how do you sum it up? What do you think about it?
I think when we think about even what we spoke about today, going back 18, 20 years, whatever it was, being in that place where you thought, if I can just cope, I'll be like, that's enough for now. And then getting to a point where you think, you go through all those things over the years, and don't get me wrong, like life was still good enough in some ways, and there was good times and obviously bad times, but getting to the point now where you think, I actually know now that there's a way for however long moving forward, I know how life can be different and stuff. I'm probably not going to have to deal with the really lows, like I have done in the past, where obviously, you know, things could have turned out a lot worse, and just appreciating what you've currently got, and knowing that the work that you're putting and you keep doing is going to make a big difference for me, but also for family and stuff as well, which is obviously one of the main reasons for doing what we've done.
Yeah, massive. And this is not for work with me specifically, but this type of stuff, now that you've done it, now that you've been there and you've compared it to all different types of stuff, is this the type of stuff you would recommend people to do? Like, do you, because I'm evangelical about this stuff. Mm. Like, I think everybody should be seeing a good therapist, a good coach that they, you mentioned something before, which is really important. Like, and I talk about it a lot. It's in the book about rapport. Like, you need to click with the person who's coaching you or your therapist. It's got to be the right person for you. I bang the drum about it all the time. I think everybody should be speaking to somebody, basically. And because everybody can go through what I've gone through and what you've gone through, you don't have to suffer.
Yeah.
Where are you with that sort of stuff now? Like, do you recommend it to people? What do you think?
I think I'd say again, part of the reason being wanting to do this was around opening up a bit more myself and being like, yeah, this is what I've done and it's helped me. Because I've had a couple of conversations lately, one important conversation with a really close friend who's having some of his own difficulties and stuff. And it was good to be able to use my own experience to say, look, this is what's happened in my life as such and what I've done. The help's there if you need it, type of thing. I think the interesting thing is, one of the things on my list to do today is go to the gym. And one of the interesting things is I could go and tell everyone today I meet that I'm going to the gym and it'd be like, oh yeah, I go to this gym, or I'm going to get back in the gym in January once Christmas is out the way. If I was to say to everyone I met today, I've come here and done this because of these reasons, a lot of people would just switch off or go into themselves. But some people would probably pick up on them and go like, I could probably do with doing that. And they might open up a bit more. And if you're in that sort of frame of mind where you might need a bit of support and help, then I'd 100% recommend it because I know how it can help.
Why, out of interest, why do you think when you're talking to different people, what do you think stops people? Even when they've met someone like you who's, you know, worked with someone and they've changed their life, and I guess people in your life can see it and mention it, what do you think stops other people doing it?
The biggest thing will be the fear of the sort of the unknown, what's going to happen. I think one of the biggest things, especially if it's anything relating to addictions and stuff or just drinking and whatever, I think some of it as well is what I always thought is, you can't have a drink. You won't be able to have a bevy. So you think, oh, fuck that off. I'm not doing that. I don't want to do that. That's not what I'm doing. So I think some of it will be, well, if I go and speak to them, the first thing they're going to say is, you can't drink, or you can't do this, or you can't do that. But my understanding now is, well, you can do all of that stuff. You just need to understand what's making you do it. And if you're doing it because you want to go out and enjoy your drink and see certain people and have a good time, that's fine. It's just when we're doing it because we're not in control of things going on in our life, then that's when I think we need to sort of try and do something to sort that out so we do get that control. So I would think generally down to the fear of what's going to happen. What are they going to tell me to do? What can't I do anymore? What do I have to give up?
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting side of it. I've said to you before, like, this type of stuff, and I still think about like the coaches I worked with and my therapist and think it's like the best thing I ever did.
Yeah.
Like I there's nothing in my entire life, and I haven't got kids, so I'm sure people like you've got kids, it's like, well, having kids is the best thing, or being like married or whatever. But like, generally speaking, this work for me underpins it all. So it's like, without it, I can't even picture what my life would be like. Well, I can. That's nonsense. Like, I know what my life was like without it. It was a shit show.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But you know what? Funnily enough, I was thinking about this because it's one of the things when you reflect, you think, what's it done? What is it? And then just on a decision making alone, as in like a conscious effort I've made throughout being an adult, I'd have to say this is probably one of the best, if not the best, decision to go and make an effort and do this type of work because the results are starting to show. Obviously, it's, as I say, 37 years versus 1 year. There's still plenty of time to make changes and improve on things. But for that last 12 to 18 months, things have got progressively better and feel better. So decision-wise for me, I know that it's one of the best things I've ever chose to do because of how I feel. So I'll keep working at that, and eventually other things will change and things will open up and opportunities will happen because of what I've done. And as you say, the stuff that you've underpinned with the work that we've done. So definitely a really good decision. 100%.
And how do you feel about the future now? Like when you look forward compared to like what you used to look at about life and when we started, when you look into the future now, what does it,
do you know what? Like I think could end up living anywhere. Like literally could end up living anywhere. There's not a restriction now. I don't always have to live in the one area because I know everyone, I know everyone around there and I'm comfortable with it. There's no restriction. There's no, I don't know where I'll end up living. I know what I'd like to do. I know that I'd like to be abroad a bit more in the future and stuff like that and spend time in the sun because I enjoy the sun and being able to go out and ski and stuff like that. So having something abroad, whereas in the past, I'd have thought that's sort of beyond my capabilities. Whereas now I think, well, no, it's definitely not. Start thinking along those lines of, well, how do you want life to be? Where do you want to live? Well, I'd like a nicer climate, a nicer environment as such. So in the past, I'd have just been like, oh, well, I need to have a job because I need money. I need to pay my bills. I need this and that. Whereas now I think, well, if anything happens with your job, it's an opportunity. It's not, you know, you can't change that. Some stuff's out of your control. But what you can change is, well, how will I approach it? Should I need a new job? Or should things happen in life that are out of my control? How will I deal with it? How will I approach it? So rather than fear and everything, thinking, God, if that happens, what am I going to do? It's more a case of, well, if it does happen, I'll deal with it and see it as an opportunity rather than live in fear of it.
It's incredible. It's good to hear, mate. It's good to hear. And look, it's for me, I've said this to you before, but it's always nice to say it again. It's always a privilege to watch this, like to see like your development and the work you've put in, because this is something I bang on about constantly as well, is like, this is your work. At the end of the day, like I can share stuff, but without you doing the work, nothing happens. Yeah. And when I get to watch someone like you up close, go from where you were to where you are and then talk about the future, it's a very humbling experience and it's a privilege. So mate, you should be very pleased with yourself.
Thanks very much.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about or share that we haven't touched
on?
No,
do you know what? This has just been ideal because obviously I've wanted to, I mean, part of the work is about opening up and dealing with things. And then if I keep this all to myself, well, I'm doing the opposite to what we've always sort of worked on. And I think one of the main things that I've learned is that things won't change overnight. This is a work in progress and always will be. I think one of the things you might have mentioned to me or someone said to me in the past, I think it was Noel Gallagher, gave one of his kids a guitar and said, it's not a computer game. You can't complete it. And I think sometimes when I think about how I've approached life, you've almost been, I've got to get to there and complete it and deal with it. And then now I understand, well, that's not actually going to happen. So sort of enjoy it along the way and make mistakes and learn from them and try and do things differently. And that's sort of where it's at.
Incredible. Perfect place to end. Thank you, mate, for having the courage to share your story.
Yeah, thanks very much.
I hope you enjoyed that. If you have any questions, please feel free to drop me an email at questions@paul7cope.com. As always, if you would like to read the book that covers all of the work that Stee and I have been through, you can get the first four chapters for free. Just go to paul7cope.com/free chapters. There'll be links below this episode. And if you're interested in one-on-one coaching, there are sometimes slots available, sometimes not, depending on when you're watching this. But again, go to the website, paul7cope.com/coaching. You can see all the packages that are available. Get in touch with me. I will let you know if there are any slots available. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it helped in some way. I hope it resonated with you. Take care. See you soon.